Yeah, the mic's on, so everyone's hearing you.
Oh. Poops and farts!
Oh my god.
Poops! It farts! So many farts!
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Welcome, everyone, to a beer-filled episode of Brainstorm Brewery. This is a magic podcast, not a beer podcast, but we're going to talk about a lot of beer today, I guess. Because we got one of our favorite people that you can have in the magic community here, one of our heroes in the podcast community, we got Scotty Mack on.
Oh, blushing!
And this is a hard man to track down. We've been trying to get him on here for weeks.
This is truth.
Ever since the PT, it's like, yeah, next week, and then something comes up, or something comes up on our end. And
it's terrible. Yeah, I mean, like, we've both been guilty of it, but yeah, I've been really wanting to get on, too. I mean, Marcel and I have been talking about it since before the Pro Tour, actually, and I just felt that I wouldn't have anything to add until after the Pro Tour, and then it just, you know, I got really stale, because now the Pro Tour is over, and I'm not doing anything important. But hey, I'm here!
Indeed. So, I mean, I guess for those people living under a rock, we should let Scotty introduce himself.
Okay, I'm Scotty Mack, Mr. Scotty Mack from the A-Team podcast. If you haven't heard of that, I'll be shocked and appalled. You should go to manadeprived.com to go and check that out. All of our 120-plus episodes. We've been around the block once or twice. And, yeah, other than that, I've got a stream on Legit MTG, Modern Mastery, and I do a lot of the Mana Deprived coverage as well for pro tours and events. So I'm a pretty busy guy. I got a wife, beautiful wife, amazing wife. Yeah, they're the same wife. And I have two wonderful kids, one of which is 13. He'll be 14 this year. He loves the game about half as much as I do, so that's enough. And the daughter loves cards. She's already doing the Kibler shuffle. So, I mean, like, I don't know how much better I can be doing with those, you know? The wife doesn't play, which is great, so that means that I get to keep all the cards in my collection. I don't have to share. So it's pretty sick.
I'm going to patent a dance move called the Kibler shuffle now. That's my goal in life.
That's good. That's good. It should almost be like, you know, when you fan your hands in front of your face from the 80s.
Oh, yeah. You know? That's the Kibler shuffle.
You got to do the knee-knocking thing, too.
You got to do it when you win. It'll be like the Super Bowl shuffle, but it'll be for winning a GP or something.
Nice.
You got to do it during karaoke when you're doing gun dance style.
Yeah, I have been known to rock them up every now and then. But yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's pretty sweet. I'm excited to be here.
So you just came off of your stream. You're doing the Modern Masters on there. You want to talk about what your deck was and what you're thinking about it?
Sure. So this week, it was week two. The formula for the stream has basically turned into, you know, 2 weeks with a deck and then we move on to something else to, you know, try to figure out what's decent in the format, figure, you know, play some underplayed cards or, you know, now that we're not in Pro Tour qualifying season for the format, it's wide open and people are playing every sort of ham sandwich possible. So, you know, like this week we're playing Bloody Zoo, for example. It was our second week of that. So this is a deck that's been popularized initially by I can't even pronounce his name to save my life, but it's XMIMX on Twitter and on Modo. And it's basically like, it's a zoo list. It plays like Tarmogoyfs and Deathrite Shamans, but it's got like Knight of the Reliquaries, main deck Blood Moon, couple Domirads, you know, a lot of burn and stuff. It's very similar, I guess, in concept to the deck that Kibler and Froelich did really well with at the last Grand Prix. But yeah, it's pretty sweet. I've been having a lot of fun. Like main deck Blood Moon just smokes so many decks in the format. And like when you're pitching it on turn two on the play, it can shut out decks just by itself. In the sideboard, I was playing, you know, two Chokes as well because that card's legal in the format. And it was just, it's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. The first version played like Burning Tree Emissary and it was kind of terrible just because everyone's sort of bigger than that. And it just really wasn't that good unless you're, you know, turn one Faithless Looting, turn two Guy, bring back two Vengevines. Like, unless that's your play lines, it's pretty abysmal. So This version's just a bit more hate, like Thundermaw Hellkites at the top. One Zealous Conscripts is pretty sweet. Like, anyways, the deck is pretty spicy. You guys can check it out, and it was a lot of fun. I had KYT on as well. It was good.
So I guess tell, you know, everyone listening how long you've been, you know, doing the strings. It's something a lot of people are trying to get into now, starting to watch more of. You know, how long have you been doing it, and what have you learned about, you know, being on the streaming end of it that is interesting, or, you know, that people like to see when you're the one streaming?
Sure. That's a good question, actually.
This will actually help me, too, because I'm so new to the whole concept of streaming. I still giggle when somebody refers to they're going to go streaming.
It's
still sounds dirty for me. That's how new it is.
It's a funny story. It's funny you should ask that. So I started streaming in the summertime, and I decided that I was just, you know, the wife would go out, she'd have her girls' night, and I was home with the kids, and I thought, you know what, like, there's nothing else to do. Maybe I'll just fire up a stream, and, you know, a bunch of people that, you know, I know through Twitter and that I don't ever really get a chance to hang out with, or, you know, everyone else is home on a Saturday night. And so I would just, like, at first, because I didn't have any sort of hookups, so I'd be playing on Cockatrice, which was god-awful and terrible. But what would be sweet is I would just have all these amazing people in the chat, and I would get fucking hammered. Like, white chick hammered, right? And nice. It's like, well, I mean, if it works for Kim, right? So what I found was that I was just hanging out, and we were having just some of the most insane conversations. People would ask me questions, and we'd answer it, and then we'd just, like, go back and forth, and just literally, like, virtually hanging out with your friends. And that's what kind of got me into it in the first place. And, like, it's no surprise that I'm comfortable in front of the camera and comfortable in front of the Skype headset. Like, I've been doing our podcast now forever. I'm in sales anyway. Like, I mean, Ryan's met me in person. I'm certainly no wallflower by any stretch, right? So.
Sure.
Yeah, so it was like a natural progression for me. It's literally like just hanging out with your friend. And so then it kind of came around that, you know, we were talking about it on the A-Team one day where I said, you know what, like GP Toronto's coming up, and I know if I put in the right practice, like I have the mental acuity to be able to do some other, like I know, like I just have to put in the right practice. And of course, like everybody was like, yep, call. And like, fuck you guys, thanks. Sport. But anyway, so I picked it up and I thought about it, and I literally rolled it around for almost a full week before I got a hold of Medina, and I was like, okay, look, you know, like if this is something that you want to support, I know you're high on the FNM hero right now, and it's coming down to a close to an end, and we like to rally behind the champion and watch his progression. You know, it's like any other good Rocky movie. And that's really how I felt. And I decided that I'd pick some decks, I'd find what I liked, and I'd work on it, understand the format, and get in a lot of good practice. And of course, it's fantastic because a lot of the connections that I've been able to make, not only through, you know, just like Canadian Magic being a close knit community, but also obviously through, you know, my social networks of Twitter and Facebook, and doing the podcast, we've met a million pros. Like almost everybody that's relevant in the game today, like I've met or hung out with virtually. So it was really easy for me to call up people like Alexander Hain, you know, and like Lucas Seau. Like these are all really notable Canadian players, and be like, hey, you know, even Tom Martel did a spot on my stream at one point, and I was just like, hey, Tom, like, how would you mind guest piloting with me? And so what we did was we literally like just, so he jumped on the stream and, you know, they all would do that. And so I'd share the screen and we would walk through talking about the decks, why we're exploring certain play lines. And let me tell you, like having somebody sit there and explain to you why you are making each play and what things you need to be considering. And like, as you're going along, like it is the most amazing way to learn because I'm literally having my hand held the entire time. Like it's to the surprise of no one, I dropped zero games the night that Alexander Hain, fresh off his Pro Tour win, was on my stream. Like to the surprise of no one. And it was pretty sick. And it was really nice because I could certainly feel my own progression, you know, as we moved along. Huh. And it was really awesome. I mean, I was winning more games on my own. You know, the stream with Tom was awesome because there were some periods of time where, you know, my play lines were better than what he was putting forth. And it was such a wicked feeling. I mean, sun shines in a dog's ass some days, right? But it was pretty sick.
Yeah, clocks could be wrong twice a day, right? Broken clock.
Yeah. Awesome. So I ended up, we ended up building right up to Grand Prix Toronto, which was 7th through 9th weekend. And I ended up, so I fought hard for 3 buys, I won a GPT. Like, I don't play a lot of Magic competitively, right? So, it was pretty sweet. And, so I got 3 buys, and I ended up, missing cut. which was frustrating as hell. I ended up drawing, you know, some variants, some bad plays, some misses, and I didn't get there. So that was really frustrating, and I kind of dropped off for a while. And then I thought, you know what, screw it, we'll pick it back up. And it's been fun. I mean, since the pressure's been off the learning, it's not sort of how well you're doing, it's what decks are out there and what different strategies can we employ while we're teaching ourselves with the new format post-banning. So it's been really sweet. The streams are running on Monday nights, and so it's sweet. There's an article every week on Fridays on legitmtg.com, and we give away credit every week on the show, which is Monday nights at 9:30 Eastern, so you guys can check that out. And yeah, that's been the stream. It's been a good show. Good times. It's really sweet to be able to interact with the audience. Everybody kind of really helps you learn more, make the right plays. There's a lot of debate, and everybody just has a good time. I mean, especially if there's a lot of notable trolls that go around and just like make fun about everything and everybody, and they're entertaining. So it's
pretty
cool.
Take off your shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's been a lot going around about streamers who take off their shirts. I just want to know which side of the camp you fall on.
I actually prefer to take my pants off.
Oh, okay.
Is that how the Canadians do it? Is that sort of?
I just consider myself like next level risque. Like I have no problem sitting here going, "Yep, that's right. I'm free balling right now, and you can't see it." So it's pretty sweet.
Your move, Travis Wu.
That's right. Between him and Michael Hetrick, who knows?
Yeah, so Tyrone, he was actually telling me right before we got on that he was watching your stream, and that was pretty good. MTG Brainstorm out there, shout out to him.
Yep.
You have one there. So you guys want to move into Picks of the Week, but before we do that, what are you guys drinking?
I will go first. I am drinking a brewed by Trappist Monks. This is a Trappist Roquefort. I don't know how many different degrees they are, I guess, of strength and darkness. This is a 10. I don't know if that's on a scale of 10, but there's 6, 8, and 10 widely commercially available. This is number 10. These are about like $10 a bottle, so I definitely saved this one for a special occasion, getting Scotty Mac on the cast. Because one of these gets me good and sloshed, so I'm really looking forward to finishing this.
Nice.
Interesting. I'm keeping it classy with a Bud Light Lime.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just joking. I have a line in Google, Sunset Wheat. There was some Bud Light Lime in the fridge, but I didn't want to get made fun of, so I got a line in Google instead.
So you're drinking an 8-month-old beer, then. Good thing we're not going to make fun of you.
Yeah, but, so you're saying normally,
a summer beer in March.
So you're saying normally, if we weren't on the podcast, you'd be grabbing the Bud with Lime?
The Bud Light Lime? If it's the only thing in the fridge, I will drink it. Get it when people are coming over. But
way of evading the answer.
I wouldn't even play beer pong with Bud Light Lime.
I hope not.
Sex isn't that bad.
They play beer pong with, you know, the good stuff like the Keystone or the Natty Light.
So I'm drinking something called Brothers Thelonious. It's a Belgium style Abbey Ale from the North Coast Brewing Company. I believe it's a 9.4, and it's pretty tasty. It's all right. Not the best beer, but
it's good. But it's 9.4%, so
I'm going to be all right.
You're going to like it halfway through, no matter how bad it tastes.
It's true. I am drinking, well, have been drinking, and am continuing to drink half tequila and half Arnold Palmer, and it is delicious, and I like it.
What do we call that, a Dirty Palmer?
Yes, that's what I call it, but yes, it is in fact Dirty Palmer.
Nice. Well, I'm drinking Innocent Gun tonight. I have leftovers from St. Patrick's Day. I have some Irish cask Innocent Gun. So what this is Innocent Gun is a Scottish brewery. It's located in Edinburgh, Scotland. And they make a whole bunch of different beers. But the way they do it is they brew the beers and then they cure it in booze casks. So, it's unbelievable. So like the rum finish. So anyway, so the one I'm having now, it was like, it was cured in an Irish whiskey. So it's a very dark beer. It almost looks, you know, not quite Guinness dark, but dark. And it's just so smooth, not exceptionally carbonated. So it just goes down extremely well. And I mean, they're 7.4%. And these things are amazing. They're just so delicious. But like, there's some amazing ones in the lineup. I'm really excited. I've been a big fan of them for quite some time. And plus they sell the original version in very large fucking bottles. And it's like the original, for example, is like Scottish beer with hints of toffee, vanilla, and oak.
Oh, nice.
Oh my god. So like food matches, cause I know you're a nice foodie, like curries and grilled seafood, for example. But yeah, it's really, really good.
Do you like to pair your beer and food, or your wine pair, or how do you deal with it?
I'm more of a wine pair than a beer pair, but I mean, in the summertime, you can't go wrong with making sure you got the right beer, right? Like the Irish Whiskey Cask, for example, like chocolate cake is on food match list for this beer. Chocolate cake. Beer and chocolate fucking cake. Come on!
That's fine. I like that. Yeah, as much of a wine person as I am, like, we honeymooned in Michigan's wine country. You don't go mow the lawn and then come inside and have a glass of Chardonnay. Like, you definitely have to at least have a go-to beer. Yeah. And have an appreciation for a good craft microbrew.
Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, I love wheat beers. I will drink wheat beers all day, every day. But right now, I'm just loving the Innis. Loving the Innis.
So speaking of loving, what about some of those loving in the picks of the week? Is there any cards you guys are...
That was a seamless segue, Marcel.
Oh, that was as rough as you get.
That was so good.
You need to tell I've been a veteran at this.
Almost as good as our, almost as good as my editor trolling Jason on Facebook.
Do I get to go first?
Yeah,
do I get to go
ahead.
So you guys don't snipe my pick?
All right. Yeah, we do. That happens. So
I know.
Okay.
I'm looking at Ryan's selection, and it's like basically any card. So I'm just gonna go first and make sure that he doesn't pick my card and fuck me. It's gonna be great. So my pick of the week is Tristani, actually. Jason, god damn it!
you guys can't see this. Jason is taking the show notes and just taking Scotty's calls and making them his own now.
But I'm going to pick Tristani. She's currently selling on StarCity at like $3.49 or something like that. Very underplayed mythic. And since a lot of the decks are playing midrange right now in standard, what you're seeing is a lot of the like Thragtusk, Restoration Angel, like blinking shenanigans. And whereas normally aggro decks were playing, like with Junk being really, really popular right now, with a lot of the aggro decks traditionally just playing Rock's Faith Mender, Tristani is just way better in so many situations, especially if you're just like playing Loxodon and Smiters, gaining four, and just like blinking a bunch of nonsense shit, and she's a 2/5. So it's that's my pick of the week. At 350, it feels like she's really, really underpriced, and she could easily just be like a $6 card. So that's my pick.
I'm with you, and especially going forward, the fact that she's, you know, a really solid EDH general.
Yeah.
That's something you're going to want to have in your binder, bare minimum. And yeah, just scooping them at 350 right now, it seems like cheating.
Yeah. Here as well, Amanda Worm, which is another undervalued card, and who knows, post-rotation, they may have a, you know, fit in a very good deck.
Yeah, Ryan showed me how absurdly powerful Tristani and Rock's Faith Mender are together in his Seance build.
Yes.
He was, you know, using Seance to put a an Armada Worm token into play, and then using Tristani to copy the token of the original Armada Worm, so you get 20 worms, 20 life, 40 if you have a Faith Mender, you keep 15 power worms, it's like, you just don't lose. I would walk over routinely, like, he'd be playing against a zombie player. The zombie player would be at 18 because Ryan hadn't really done anything to hurt him yet, but Ryan was over 100 life, and the guy was just like, I'll Pillar of Flame you! Okay, I'm at 198, go. So yeah, it's
I broke 400 at States. That was the highest I got.
I'm glad to hear you actually made it work, even though it's not working in the Junk Reanimator right now. There's no Seance.
It's just people aren't like trying out the deck. I mean, again, like Jason pointed out a while ago, people are playing pretty much the Seance deck without Seance, which just makes the deck better. So I don't know. I think people are just again afraid to try it because it's a bulk rare.
Well, and it's funny who you talk to, because I was talking to our buddy Bernie McKino, and he's kind of like, yeah, it's my Conjurer's Closet deck from States. I just kind of thought that was funny. A lot of people kind of independently came up with the Junk Rites shell, but the current popular version is sort of minus four Seance, but they're running the full four and Burial Rites and, like, an Ascetic Slime. So a lot of the builds are definitely similar, and I think they're just adding more Burial Rites, but Ryan prefers to pay four for his Burial Rites once and have it work twice a turn cycle.
Okay. So you want to go to your pick of the week?
Me? Sure.
Yeah.
I have a saying when it comes to my picks. Sometimes it's do as I buy, not as I say. So I think it means more to people to know that I have actually bet my own money on a pick than just saying, oh, yeah, I think you should pick this up. So I do think you should pick these up, and I definitely have. I went around Grand Prix Pittsburgh and bought every single foil Abrupt Decay in the room at around $20 each. I think if Deathrite Shaman is going to be a $60 foil, Abrupt Decay is not a $20 foil. Those get played in a lot of the same decks. I think Abrupt Decay has some applications in Modern and Legacy that are very obvious and very powerful. I think Abrupt Decay and Deathrite Shaman as a team are the reason that Bayou went from about 50 to about 90 to 100. So foil Abrupt Decay at 20 just doesn't seem right if Deathrite Shaman's going to be 60. And if a card like foil Brainstorm can be 60, it just seems like you got to scoop foil Abrupt Decay at 20. Okay. And if you guys don't think that's a good one because that's sort of expensive and it's not great to invest $500 speculating on, 25 cards, another thing I bought a lot of at the GP was Primordials. Mm-hmm. They're very cheap. Like I paid a quarter to 33 cents, for Primordials and I got a fat pack box full of just.
Particularly just, the green one.
I mean.
Now, are you getting foils or are you getting both?
Some of the foils are like $5-6 already, but people still think they're a buck in trade. So I was trading for the foils. I wasn't paying cash on those. I was trading for the foils at about a buck or two, and nobody said no to that. And I was just buying cash on the non-foils, and I just filled a fat pack box. Even if they're all a buck minimum later, I paid 45 cents. And I think if you told your stockbroker that you had a guaranteed quadrupling up at least on something, he would tell you to get a second mortgage on your house and spend all the money you could. So, having a couple $100 invested in the Primordials, it seems, even if I got to wait 2 years, it seems like free money to me.
Especially, I think, the green one, just because there's such a clear track record for those effects. Like, Woodfall Prime is as expensive. Boring Clex just went to $10. I mean, it's just such easy call. And, a lot of times people want to speculate on the next big standard card, the next big modern card. And they miss that while less exciting, stuff like the Primordials are just, like you said, almost guaranteed money. And it's really an important part of diversifying, your cards if you're holding them, with the intention of selling them down the road. So I think that makes that a really good call.
Wasn't there a deck also recently in one of the Star City events or whatever that played two of the Sepulchral Primordial in the sideboard in Junk Reanimator? So, like, for mirror tech to snap it wide open?
I mean, if you're reanimating these guys, it, again, feels like cheating. Like, I would really be fine reanimating a Sepulchral Primordial. That seems actually playable and standard. And maybe Sylvan Primordial, too. I could see it in some sort of ramp type thing.
Acidic Slime deck. You could just be a land destruction and just crush their lives.
I'm playing it in my current brew, but my current brew is probably bad, so.
And then you can play Assemble the Legions and then Send Into Madness, and then you got just craziness going on.
Guild Feud and Seance.
All right. Who wants to go next? Ryan, do you want to go ahead?
No.
No.
Okay. I'll go next.
All right.
I'll say that this is more of a Moto call also, because that's my prices.
Are so that's all you ever do. It's fine.
Well, that's where I'm at. I don't play paper.
It's fine. You've never been wrong to my estimation, so go ahead.
Hey, that's good. Well, what happens in Moto generally happens in paper, except for, like, Craterhoof Behemoth, which is, like, $24 right now.
Yeah, tell them to my giant box full of Blasphemous Acts.
They went up. Shut up.
Oh, go cry a river.
Blasphemous Act went up a lot.
I know. It sure did. It just took 2 years and went up for a different reason. Go ahead, Marcel.
Well, I'll say, sell your Bonfires of the Dam. If you got Crater Hooves, definitely sell your Crater Hooves, unless you really want to play the deck, but that deck will drop soon, and that card will drop, and get out while you can. I got out at 18, it's at 24 now. But Bonfire has been hovering at about 30, and it's been hovering there for quite some time, but you haven't seen it in too many decks. I think that's more of a price memory. And as we get closer to rotation, if we don't see it in more decks, you don't see it in a green-red build, and don't see it against aggro, and that's actually where the card shines the most. It's not really finding where you can play this card often, and even then, it's more of a two of. And I think if you got your copies, get out now while you can. Get out while Bonfire is still on its high. Make your money now before you see it, slowly dip into rotation and then back down to a card that you wish you would have sold sooner.
Yeah, I finally got rid of the one Bonfire I still had in paper the other day, and I when we first pulled up, I was like, oh yeah, this is like, $27 to $30 or something, because that's kind of where it had been. And we looked it up, and it's even lower than that now in paper. The card's definitely still headed down. It's possible it'll come back later. There's still some time left for it, but I think, like Marcel said, getting rid of him now is definitely the safer play.
Now, I got a kind of a noob to Moto Finance question, because I really am not familiar with that at all. Would you say there's more or less kind of turnover for people trying to get out of their cards and sell them on Moto? Is it easier to sell because there's like bots everywhere as opposed to
so much easier.
Trying to sell at your LGS, you don't really have an out to get close to retail, or is there less selling?
As easy as it is to buy cards, which you could do in just a you know, an impulsive manner, is the same way that you could sell cards. There's bots that will buy them, and some will pay a lot less than others, but there's some that pay, you know, pretty decent price, and you get rid of your cards generally if they're valuable. If you happen to buy some crazy random bulk rare, don't expect to sell a whole lot of seances. You know, they won't buy them, but pretty much if it's valuable, they'll get them. So everything's pretty liquid. Like, I sold a bunch of modern cards, and I got rid of pretty much everything in a matter of a couple hours.
So do you think that Moto is a little bit more sensitive to price changes then? You're going to see downward trends appear there first because it's easier to sell. People don't have to wait for a GP to get a decent price.
Yeah, I think so. The trends are, I mean, it's different because there's less people that are playing constructed on Moto than there is drafters. So once, you know, the cars that are being drafted are a lot easier to get. So the people that go moving the cars, the price changes on those a lot less. But once you get into the cars that have already been sold, there's less drafting going on. You'll see cars that you wouldn't expect to spike that will just spike out of nowhere. And, you know, a lot of people wish they would have been in there sooner.
Fair. Well, I guess I will go with my pick of the week, which is going to be Baneslayer Angel.
I hate you.
I know, I'm just...
What's wrong?
That's why we don't write them down beforehand.
Nah, I'm just messing with you, Corbin. No, mine isn't Angel, though. A little more under the radar. I think that a card that should be picked up right now is Sigarda, Host of Herons. Not necessarily because of the play that it's going to see in Standard, although it, you know, may take a jump because if it sees a deck in the next few months, whatever. I think this is more of a long-term call, because if you look at the other, like Addison, Gisela, though they have more flashy effects, they don't really have the same playability in potentially Modern or Legacy like Sigarda does, and she still has the casual appeal of being a legendary angel. And right now, at $8, she's lower than both of the other ones, and I feel like she has the most potential both in the competitive and casual, like, all around, so I can't understand why she's lower than the other two.
She's $6 on Star City right now. It's on sale.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So even lower then. Yeah, I can't see a reason not to be picking these up right now.
Well, shouldn't you wait till after rotation?
I don't think so, because this card is already set in stone because of the casual crowd. Like, this is not a competitive price right now. Though, yes, it may drop slightly. I don't see it being nearly as much of a drop as, say, you know, some standard staple. This has a lot more going for it already. It's the same thing with Parallel Lives. Like, Parallel Lives is not going to drop in price once it rotates out of standard. It's going to be $4 still, if not more. Yeah.
I think this card is poised to do something, actually, sooner than you might think. It stuffs Liliana. So, like, I don't think it's all that crazy to say this could get played in Legacy, because Liliana is such an important card in Legacy. People are playing, Devour Flesh and other sort of removal like that because it's cheap mana-wise. This stuffs all that, too. Sigarda was getting quite a bit of play in Standard before, and then, you know, some of the printings happened and things got shaken up a little bit, but this has always been a card that was just, it's been waiting and ready to do something, so this is it's a really good pick.
A lot of the junk mid-range decks, like, I mean, and junk Reanimator, and even the green-white decks, when they were around, were totally playing this girl in the sideboard, and she's really, really good against, like, Jund, Control, you know, and even Flash. Like, you have to have a Wrath or she's going to wipe the floor with you. She's really, really sick. Yeah. Like, I'm playing 2 in my 75 right now in Standard. She's really good.
It's another one of those cards that you just look at and you're like, how could it possibly be that cheap? It seems like every dollar that it's worth is due to its casual appeal and almost nothing else.
All right, I guess I'll jump in with my spoiled pick, which was Baneslayer Angel, another 5-mana angel. And this is, I know the last couple weeks we've kind of been talking about the rise of casual cards. And this is one that, you know, was $50 a couple years ago when it was tearing up Standard. It kind of fell off to $5, $6, sat there for a while, went up to 7 or 8 for the past couple years. It's all of a sudden, you know, reaching 15 or so. And I think, one, it's a testament, we've talked about before, how many new players are coming into Magic. I think this card in particular is probably poised to continue climbing just because it's so iconic as far as Angels go. I mean, if you were to name an angel from the past 5 years, you're probably going to say Baneslayer Angel at this point, just because of the effect it had on Magic when it came out. And I think that makes it a particularly good hold, you know, moving forward, picking these up in trade and just kind of sitting on them. And you find that player who really wants them because they're an angel and they're a great, cool angel and everything. And maybe you get rid of them then. But for the most part, I really like picking these up at the moment.
Sounds good. So let's talk about Modern, especially you, Scott. You're probably the one that's more involved with Modern than anybody else here by far.
I kind of me? Yeah, absolutely. I can see how you would think that.
Jason, you don't play. All you do is trade cards, supposedly.
That's not necessarily true. I was spotted at GP Pittsburgh playing a friendly game of Elder Dragon Highlander. That is totally a thing that actually happened.
That's totally Modern too, right?
There were Modern cards in it. Anyway, let's let Scotty Mac take the helm. Enough of my tomfoolery.
Oh God! Now you know what? So what do you guys want to know? Modern PTQ season is ending.
Talk about how good Merfolk is.
So Merfolk is a deck.
thank you. That's about all we had to say about that.
It's probably a tier 1.5 deck, but
don't give it that much credit. Come on.
No, it could be.
Is that Canadian tier 1.5? So there's like an exchange rate that is actually like an American tier 3.
Any dollar is worth more than an American dollar, just for the record.
Sorry? Canadian dollar is worth more than I was going to say, because if you were going to flip on that, I was going
to
like...
No, it used to be flipped, but these days, the Canadian dollar is worth more. Anyways.
Yeah. But honestly, like, Merfolk's a fine deck. I actually had a couple of people on my stream tonight asking me to play Merfolk.
Yeah.
Because they just want to see me, like, turn blue dude sideways. It's a,
was
actually,
their
like,
name
it's,
C. Hostler? Just,
it wasn't.
Just
no, it wasn't. But I'm not 100% convinced that Corbin didn't, like, sign on under some pseudonym just
you
to
know,
try to play.
I wouldn't say that I won't ever couldn't, you know, that's...
Yeah, I wasn't going to put it past you.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just, it would have been so next level. It would have been great. But truthfully, it's just because it's the biggest troll. I mean, I love playing control-y blue cards and having to look at a bunch of islands, play a bunch of little tutus is just a lot of people's idea of sick and twisted torture. So, like, for me, it's just not my deck. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Anyways, but it's really good. Like, it's definitely, when I was playing Jund, it was one of the decks that I feared the most because it was just capable of, like, turn three fucking squish you. It was really good. So, I don't know. It's reasonable. But, like, Modern format itself, like, it's just really interesting because it's basically, like, 50% combo and then 50% mid-range. And it's weird because, or like 50% rock, I guess is probably the better way to put it.
That's a lot of 50%, so you sure you know how right it
works. Rock over mid-range is probably more reasonable. Even if I wanted to go 40-40 and 20% nonsense, that's probably fine too. But like, I feel like the problem is that a lot of the combos, like, none of them are the same. Like, there's no common thread really between them, right? Like, you're looking at Tron, which just eats, you know, random 60% of the field, you know? And I mean, even then, that breaks down into two different types, blue, white, and red, green. But like, red, green is typically the one that's most, you know, ubiquitously taken as Tron. And then you've got like Splinter Twin, right? And you've got Eggs. And like, all of these decks, just like, they're so, you need to, like, Modern is such a sideboard format. You know, if you don't have the proper sideboard, you're not ready. Like, there is no single 60 that's really, really good. Like, you're not going to do extremely well. It's 100% a 75 card format.
So is that, in your opinion, a good thing or a bad thing? Or I know some people have complained, you know, that the sideboard cards are too important because they swing these matchups too much. Is that the opinion you hold, or do you think, you know, that's acceptable?
See, okay, so for me personally, if I want to look at this from an FNM standpoint, format's perfectly fine. Like, I 100% think that it's one of the greatest FNM formats that we could possibly have at our disposal. That's constructed. The only other one being Block, I think, because it's really neat. But, and just because nobody plays Block, and it's nice to see the innovation. But what's really sweet about playing Modern at an FNM is that you can have a deck that, like, curb stomps a bunch of the field, right? But you absolutely are 100% giving away, like, Twin, say, for example, right? But, so if nobody's playing Twin at your FNM, then you could 100% play this deck, which under no circumstances would you bring to any sort of competitive tournament, and fucking have a great time with it, right? Similarly, you know, offenders are like Tron, like I said, Tron, Eggs, and whatever. But like, being able to know your metagame and dodge those decks, it gives you a lot more room to play a bunch of different shit. So I think that's awesome. I really love Modern as an FNM format. If I want to go to a GP, and my goal is to win the thing, and I have to worry about matchup roulette in addition to making sure that my sideboard is like robust enough. Like, that's pretty crappy. I'm not happy with it right now as a competitive format. I think what they need to do is they need to like ban two of the combo decks, or they need to unban a bunch of tools that are going to free up some of the decks that are going to, you know, naturally hate out these combo decks and equalize the format.
I'd like some unbans, frankly, because if you ban combo pieces, people will play shittier combo pieces. They really will. Like, if you ban Sleight of Hand, people just play Telling Time. Like, they will just play whatever they have to do, because people are always going to want a combo. So I think if you make some of the other decks a little more competitive, so people don't have to play, because they'll play bad combo cards, just to still be able to play those decks. I don't think you're ever going to stop that, unless you ban just, like, the entire marquee cards of those decks. So I would like to see some unbans. I don't think there's a good reason to have Green Sun Zenith banned right now.
Yes, there is.
I agree.
No, it needs to be banned.
Well, the thing is, like, you talk about these combo decks all need different, you need different answers to all these combo decks because they're so individual or whatever. Like, so all of a sudden you put Green Sun Zenith back in the format and I can go search for whatever answer I need in my main deck, because you stick a one of in your main deck and it's not necessarily that damaging. But you Green Sun, so you always have the answer. And then you start pushing out a ton of the combo decks because Green Sun Zenith deck always has it.
You also just produce another combo deck in Elves.
How Birthing Pod is, right? Like, that deck's pretty good.
Right.
But, Court of Calling is terrible, because it's just, like, really mana intensive or whatever. But, like, being able to play Green Sun Zenith along with Birthing Pod, our Green Sun Zenith staff. Yep.
You just always have it, which, to me, it would limit a lot of the other things people can do and make it too consistent. That's my take on it.
And, I mean, there's a lot of, like, Jace's unbanning, but, like, that's never, ever, ever going to happen.
I agree. Multiple reasons, too, I think.
If only because it'll remind people how miserable Standard was right before they banned
Jace.
Also, Bloodbraid Elf is gone, and that was the one card that could easily keep it in check.
Right. Not to mention Jace would become, like, $500, and that's completely for a format.
I can't for one second agree with the argument price for Jace being a barrier to the format. Fucking Tarmogoyf and Thoughtseize are in this format, and they're each, Thoughtseize is almost a $100 card.
Right, and they don't like that. Like, they don't want that, so why would they? It's one of the reasons that they wouldn't let it happen.
It's not enough reason to ban a card just on price. That's all.
True.
I never see them banning it officially. They can't be like, we're banning this card because it costs too much, because they really can't admit that it costs too much.
I agree entirely. So, I mean, but that's not why it was banned, but it is now a strike against its unbanning, in my opinion. Because it makes the format more inaccessible. If all of a sudden Jace becomes...
But you're going to have Modern Masters 2 next year that's going to have Jace in it.
It's not going to do much. Like,
I'll do it.
It wouldn't... Even if it was in Modern Masters 2, right? It's $100 not being legal, okay? Well, as soon as it was unbanned, the price would go on an absurd spike. And even if it came down to whatever it would be, okay, when the dust settles 6 months down the road, even if it's reprinted in Mythic and Modern Masters 2, you're still going to end up with multiple decks running four ofs of Jace. It makes the format more inaccessible because it is insanely expensive.
So you do a Modern Masters and then you do a Judge Foil. Like, they can make it marketable. Like, that's not the point. The point is, if they want to get a product out there, they can. That's why Modern is so great. And like Scotty said, like, the price is not a barrier for banning or unbanning a card, because if they really need to bring down the price, they absolutely can.
Like I said, in my opinion, it is
a valid argument against it. It is part of an argument. If that was the only reason, I would say, no, that's not a real thing. Like we say, though, with Bloodbraid Elf ban now, Jace would be absurd. And when you take all of that into account and then consider the fact that it makes Modern more inaccessible, I think it's just another strike against it on a long list.
Yeah, like, it's not gonna happen, right? And I wish it would, cause I fucking love playing with Jace, and Legacy is just way too out of my price range, right? But, like, Jace is insane, and he's like the biggest mistake that WotC ever made, unfortunately. And I hate to say this, I like talking shit about my boy. but that's not gonna happen. I think that more reasonable unbannings that you're gonna see are things like Bitter Blossom could actually, you know, potentially come off. Yeah, it'd be all right. And the other one that people are talking about Visions, but, like, Twin with Visions is miserable.
Yes.
They'd be drawing right about the turn they're trying to go off.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think Jerry T pretty famously said if they allowed Visions in the format, he would make them regret it.
Yeah.
I think it was an exact quote.
Yeah. I want to see Mental Misstep on Banded Modern.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the one I want to see. And the reason that I want to see it is because you look at cards like Deathrite Shaman, which are taking over the format. You look at, you know, the ideal removal cards like Path to Exile, Lightning Bolt. You know, these are all, you know, Thoughtseize. Like, this is a great way to combat, you know, these sorts of abilities. And I 100% would love to see Mental Misstep on Ban.
You don't think that would help combo decks? They struggle.
They've already nerfed everything else, like, for the most part. Most of the hate cards that that you're going against combo decks are 2-drops anyway. I mean, like, all of the 2-drops in the sideboards are insane.
Where, I mean, like, I guess it stops Path against Twin. It stops Grafdigger's Cage if anyone plays that against Pod. So there's some things it hits.
Yeah, like when I tried to play the original, it was Splinter Twin and Pestermite in Extended. I was trying to play it with Cryptic Command backup to get around Path. I would love a Mental Misstep backup.
I don't know if it would make it too strong enough.
Yeah. Anyways, that's a card I'd love to see. I think it'd be interesting. It'd spice things up.
So I guess, in general, your thoughts on Modern and its success as a format to this point in the 2 years it's been around? I mean, is this something that you think is going to continue to grow moving forward?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, when it first came out, it was really sweet because everyone was like, oh, this is great. I can play all of these old friggin' decks that I've wanted to play forever, but, you know, they rotated out and Extended is miserable. You know, so that's cool. Like, I never played Jund in Standard, but as soon as I could play Jund in Modern, I was all over. You know, and it was just like, yeah, Bloodbraid Elf into Tarmogoyf and into Liliana, like, sign me up. Like, that's awesome. I watched Reed Duke play that deck with Punishing Fire at the player, the Mox, and I was just like, yep, that's the deck. Like, not close, that's what I'm doing. And it was just so much fun. And having that format be, you know, really wide open and basically just say, okay, no Cobblade, no Valakid, okay, I got it, you know, was fine. But now I think they've gotten to the point where they've really just nerfed a lot of the competition. And so, like, they've gotten it now down to the controlled end. So now I think it's at the point where they can start coming off the gas. Like, they really need to just balance it. Like, I think they found a really good level for it to kind of get to, which is you know, we understand you can play all of these decks. People want to play all these decks, so let's let them. Let's get rid of the cards that are inhibiting people from playing all of these, you know, this wide variety of decks. But I think now they have to listen to people that are talking about the format from a competitive standpoint, and they just need to kind of, like, unban some stuff or let the gas off or something and let it kind of breathe a little and give some cards some new life.
Yeah, and I think Eric Lauer said it at PAX that they have gotten to a point now with Modern where they're pretty comfortable with the ban list and to not really expect any more large changes to it. You know, at least as far as more stuff being banned. That's a paraphrase. But I believe that's the kind of where they're at on it now.
And I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's fine. It's fine right now. And honestly, have any of you guys played Modern FNM?
I've played Modern FNM. I actually am hoping to play one this week because there's one happening.
Well, let me think. I haven't played FNM. I haven't played Modern. So no.
I played against four different decks in four rounds.
Yeah, like that. I had an FNM. That's fucking sweet.
Yeah, I was on A-Team, you had Jerry T on there, and he was talking about how miserable it was for him, but, you know, he doesn't consider it from the FNM level, and the way you guys explained it, how, yeah, you know, you get in there and play the decks that you want, it just totally makes sense. So I think Wizards has a interesting way of building this format. They just got to learn to balance the casual and the competitive.
And, I mean, the other point to make about Modern is that at some point, as a public, we just have to accept that it's here to stay, because Legacy is untenable, and say, let's make this the best we can because it's what we have. You know, so, Legacy is not going to be accessible.
That's a very interesting point. And actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you guys a question.
Okay.
Can't do
so,
that.
So let, damn it. okay, so Modern is rotating out of PTQ. Traditionally, with Extended, that meant like a rise and crash of cards. I recognize that now that the PTQ season is actually over, we're probably really late to the party. The unique piece that we have here in play about Modern as opposed to, you know, the Extended crash is that Modern is still being played, A, at FNM level, and B, at random GPs throughout the course of the world. What should we be looking at right now in terms of, like, really hard buy and sells in order to, you know, help us really keep things on track and keep the format healthy so that, you know, when that inevitable shift from Legacy to Modern happens, you're not, like, totally behind the curve. Like, how do you get in?
Literally, the only reason you're on this podcast is so you could answer that question for us.
No, I mean, just in terms of the most basic answer here without, I mean, obviously it's a very big question, is that if you have modern cards now, say stuff that is, you know, expensive, that maybe you know, like Kitchen Finks, Remands, Bellsnare, these uncommons that are worth $10+, well, Kitchen Finks isn't quite, but you get the point. All of this stuff is at risk of reprint in Modern Masters, and I think it is folly to say that we will not see some of it. Okay, so the most simplistic answer is look to hold or get into the things that are post Zendikar and after. Those are the cards you want to be getting into for Modern financially. All the cards before that you want to be out of because they're at risk of a reprint in Modern Masters, which especially on stuff like those uncommons would likely is going to tank the price quite a bit. And then I think after Modern Masters releases and it's been out for a month, you'll start to see some of those cards come down. It creates a buying opportunity at that point to get in on these cards for next Modern season.
I think even if they don't get reprinted, I think closer to the reprinting, they're going to go down. Because I think the closer we get to reprinting, more and more people are going to start selling out, and the price will be down. And I think once it's been a few months after the end of the season, and the longer we get away from the end of the Modern season as a PTQ season, I think there will be buying opportunities later on. So I think stuff is pretty much at its peak right now. I would be selling out of pretty much everything pre-Zendikar.
Yeah, that's what I've done. I've cleared out just about everything I can. As far as the pre-Zendikar stuff, the post-Zendikar stuff I'm stocking up on. Scars of Mirrodin lands, we've all been talking about for a year. We've been hoarding. Some of these things that are staples, like lands, are always very safe. I think that's probably the best place to be from a financial standpoint on this stuff. It's just these cards that are stable and have been stable. That's where you want to be in Modern. You don't want to be on the Daybreak Coronets of this broke this week and this card's going up. You know, you want to just take the more conservative approach and not always try to guess the next big jump, and instead just take the stuff that's safer, more solid plays.
So what card right now do you think has the biggest room to fall? So what card, if you had to pick one card that's going to take the biggest tumble now that rotation has happened?
Paradise Mantle.
Thoughtseize.
Paradise Mantle. Thoughtseize is played in Legacy. Paradise Mantle is played as a joke. I can't believe it's a $10 card.
Yep.
it's a $10 card? Like on Moto, I think, but like on paper, it's 10 bucks.
Yeah, let's look this up on Cool Stuff Inc. right now and see what Paradise Mantle goes for. Like, that was, like, I can't think of anything other than that Blister Core Wheeler deck that we saw. That's $10 on Cool Stuff. So, when people ask me, is like, well, you know, what's going to go up in Modern? I can't predict it because stuff in Standard actually has to be played in a good deck repeatedly to go up. Like, if Standard were more like Modern, Seance would be a $10 card. That's just all I can say. So, I'm getting out of, like, Paradise Mantles. I found I had a bunch in a box that I was ready to, like, bulk out at 75 cents or whatever they were. And I'm like, oh, I can just sell these for 40 bucks a set on eBay. So that was a nice little payday. So, I think stuff that is inflated because it has no utility anywhere else. Like, Thoughtseize is a great Legacy card. Paradise Mantle is not.
Exactly.
Cool. So anything like that it's just it seems really inflated.
Flash in the pan, flash in the pan, it probably is. Cool. And these cards spike hard, and then they come down. I mean, they don't stay there. That's why, like, Birthing Pod is one we've talked about a lot recently. It's a staple of the format. I don't really expect that to change any point in the next few years. And it's cheap right now. And it's post-Zendikar. That's exactly the kind of card I want to be stocking up on.
Yeah, I'm still sitting on my, like, 6 foil ones. Yeah, I know.
It's still insane that card is inexpensive as it is. And I think it's one of those that, you know, and if whether it's next season or it's the season after, it's just going to double overnight when people realize, hey, this probably shouldn't be as cheap as it is.
It's a matter of time.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of that's the shortest answer to your question. I mean, there's so many cards in the format, both pre-Zendikar and post-Zendikar. The ones at risk for reprints from Modern Masters and the ones not at risk, to go through and say, well, this is one we should hold on and this is one we should get rid of. So it's very, very, you can very in-depth into it, but I think what we said is that the shortest answer is everything at risk for Modern Masters right now you want to get rid of. Everything after that, it's a safe to hold on to and pick up.
Okay, cool.
So do we want to move into what's it worth next?
I can dig it.
For those of you at home, we'll recap this one more time, and we got Scotty on this week. This is where we all try to stump each other by asking each other what a particular card is worth. So this is always interesting, and sometimes even I learned stuff. Like, I think it was last week I learned Blood Moon is no longer $3 to $4. It's now $8 to $10.
And by now you mean like post
2009? Yeah, I mean maybe even earlier.
It's like, what are you talking about?
I don't know about all that.
No, that's not true. I definitely sold one for $5 on eBay like 6 months ago because that's what they were.
Come on.
I'm just messing with Corbin because it's fun. If I really want to mess with Corbin, I would laugh at his patronizing explanation of the rules of what's it worth, as this is the 46th time we've done it.
So the first one for what's it worth, I'd like to volunteer Exploration from Urza's Saga.
It top 8 in lands this weekend. We were talking about that earlier.
Which is why I picked it.
I knew 30.
I thought these were around 20 or so.
I'm pretty sure these have always been 25. I mean, or like for a long time. I mean, I know the buy list on them, and if I was to aggregate it from that, I would have to say 25.
I like extrapolating from buy list. That's kind of my favorite thing. So I'm saying 30. You're going to say 20, 25?
I'll say 22.
Marcel, what is it on Modo? Doesn't exist?
I don't even know what the card is, and I'm going to extrapolate from your guys' answers, and I'm going to say $1. And go for it. Price is Right. This is
we play by Price is Right rules here.
You die.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that one of you did hit it right on the head, and of course, the one that hit it right on the head was Ryan.
How much?
He says, "Of course." Like I'm the only person that ever get these right.
Wait. How much?
25. So here's the thing.
25.
So
24.99.
It's $24.99 out of stock.
Well, then Ryan went over and he loses.
No.
Hold on.
So it's $24.99 out of stock at Star City, and it's $24.99 in stock at Face to Face Games.
We have it in stock at Cool Stuff Inc. at $24.99. So that seems to be a pretty standard price around the web. Then.
There you go. Well done.
Yeah. Excellent.
Oh man, now I need a.
Quit changing, Ryan. How am I supposed to steal Ryan's if he can't make up his mind? I'll go next before Ryan takes mine. Can we go? Can I go next?
Yeah, whatever.
Sure. Suck it, Bouchard. Okay, what can we expect to pay a Cool Stuff Inc. for an unlimited sinkhole in near mint condition?
From which set?
Unlimited.
Oh, unlimited.
Okay, I just heard sinkhole, sorry.
He thought, like, an unlimited number of sinkholes. Perhaps.
Well, good luck finding somebody who will take an unlimited number of sinkholes. I mean...
Oh, man, I bet it's expensive.
I don't think it's that expensive. I think it's like $30.
That's...
I was going to go 35.
Unlimited?
Okay. Unlimited.
Wasn't in revised, so...
I'd say...
A revised sinkhole would be very expensive.
I'm going to say 25.
Okay. You said, oh, man, I bet it's expensive, and you're the cheapest. That's funny. Okay, 20. Marcel?
20.
Okay. Who said 30?
I
said 35. You said 30?
I said 35.
You said 35.
I said 30.
Ryan said 30. He was the closest. It's $31.99 on Cool Stuff Inc.
Victory.
I would have said actually less based on my inability to sell them for 25 on eBay in near mint condition. So this is definitely one of those things where the retail stores have small numbers of them still in stock. Sinkhole is a card that has one deck pretty much, and that's the Pox deck in Legacy that I think is a lot of fun to play. But
all the casual people.
Yeah, and people who build in cubes. And people who are building cubes have an unlimited sinkhole in there until they can find a beta one. And a beta one is excess of $50 if you're looking for one in good condition. So this is a card that really doesn't have a home right now. It's not selling very briskly on eBay, but it's so good. It's a two mana stone rain effect. How could that be bad? So
yeah, I mean, it's just iconic, I think a lot of it is driven by collectors and those people, like you said, who want it for cubes more so necessarily than legacy play. All right, who wants to go next?
I will go next. So I had somebody mention the other day, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I saw somebody say something about how collector's edition cards were worthless. And, somebody had got someone correct. So as the most iconic collector's edition card, I want to know what an international edition Black Lotus would be. Collector's edition.
See, Ryan and I are intimately familiar, having bought a collection that had a full set of collector's editions.
900? I'm going to shoot in the dark.
Oh, no.
They're worth money. They're not worth infinite money.
We didn't get 900 for the whole set of CE.
Yes, we did. That, you're thinking the Arabian Nights. The CE, oh, we got like 12.
Yeah. I would say a Black Lotus is like 250. Because yeah. I know what just the power.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that it depends a lot on your buyer just because there are not infinite copies out there and all of those things. I'll say 3.
Yeah, because I know the International is probably more than the Domestic Collector's Edition.
That is correct. Is that $3 or $300, Corbin?
$300.
Okay. either one of the other two?
Nope. You're into power. You're out of my realm.
But it's fake power.
Doesn't matter. A proxy cost me $10. Does that count?
There you go. That's it.
Well, you got a heck of a deal then. Because here, Jason is correct at $250 for the International.
Was it $250 or $249?
$249.
So I lose. I went over.
We are not playing by that rule. Stop.
Then Marcel said a dollar for nothing.
Hey, it's a joke, Jason. Damn.
He said a dollar because had it been, you know, anywhere between a dollar and the next number up.
I know why he said it.
Thanks, okay.
I still advocate spaying and neutering pets, regardless of whether we're
Oh,
not even your own pets, anybody's pets.
Sneak into their house at night. Oh, don't do that.
Doing this for Bob.
Alright, so pets. I got a good card. It's actually a pet. It's going to be a foil card.
Marcel, that was another seamless segue.
You can see what the 9.4% does for my podcasting.
That was so good. Speaking of pets, boom! We're talking about something else. Blink, you missed it.
What is your card, Marcel?
Oh, it's a foil card. What is a foil pet, the biggest pet of them all? A Charizarkos.
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
First edition?
Oh, God, this was awesome.
Is this a first edition, or is this...
Base set 2? Blaine Charizard? Which is it?
Are we seriously doing this?
I really don't know. I just threw that just because. Wow. Okay, I guess, yeah.
Marcel, there have to be like
first edition. First edition starter set Charizard.
Base set, right? Not starter set.
Whatever. First edition.
First
edition, sure, yeah.
This isn't Pokemon Snap, Corbin. You're a little out of your element.
As a matter of fact, I used to own 2 Charizards. They were not, however, first edition.
All right, well, never actually my card I was going to pick because I thought you guys were going to shun that, so we're going to move on to the card.
No!
No, what is it? Is it like 250, 300, 700?
Yeah, I have no idea. Like 250. No
idea. First edition is a couple hundred.
I'll go find
it. I really don't know where to find it.
Well, you can find it on Cool Stuff Inc.
I bet Cool Stuff Inc. has got one.
They got one on Amazon.com for $35, so I don't think that's...
It's not a first edition, then.
Ryan and I should stop doing this before we embarrass ourselves more. Let's talk about a Magic card.
Okay, I was going to go to... What's a Beta Sheevan Dragon cost?
Ah, crap. That's so much harder.
A foil Beta Sheevan?
Correct.
Hollow.
Sure. Whatever you want, dude.
Holographic.
Misprint with a foil crimp down.
Packs upside down.
200. I actually don't know how much this was worth.
Said beta, right?
Yeah, beta. A beta.
Okay, so it's not the alpha, because it'd be the major collector one. Like, I think the alpha ones are something stupid, like 350. So the beta is probably about half of that. I'm going to say, like, this is a wide range, but like 180 to 200 ish.
Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah, like I feel like I saw one in a case at the GP, and I'm cheating.
I would have had a very difficult time fielding a guess on this. So what they said sounds good to me.
Corbin, when did you start playing Gatecrash? Like, what was your first?
I started playing in Shadowmoor, so that's what, 4 years ago now, something like that.
I remember my 4th edition Sheevan Dragon. It was worth 10.
Yeah, I have not been around as long.
All right, so you guys are pretty good. It's $200 sold out of Cool Stuff. So that's really infinite, but...
Who knows?
It's really infinite.
Is that 200 or is that $199.99?
That's $199.98.
No, it's
okay.
Infinite, Ryan.
Oh, man. I'm not going to lie. That's why I said 180 to 200. I thought it was 200, but I didn't want to say 200 and have Jason get after me again.
Well, yeah. All right, so this is the end of the cast. We're past it. You gotta get Scotty to sleep. He's tired of the debauchery.
Scotty, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So I'm 100% happy to be here.
100%? I don't think I'm 100% happy to be here.
Well, Jason's rarely 100% happy for anything.
That's true. I was 100% happy with something once. I didn't enjoy it.
Scotty, tell everyone at home where they can remind them where they can find you and your stream.
Sure. So absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Scotty Mac, MRSCOTTYMAC. You can find me on Facebook. You can reach me via email at Gmail at the same as my Twitter handle. The stream can be found at twitch.tv/legitmtg. As I said, Mondays, and then the article on LegitMTG on Friday. You should totally check out the A-Team, of course, on manadeprived.com, normally up every Monday morning, barring any technical difficulties, like this week. But yeah, that's pretty sweet. Also, you would do us a huge, amazing favor if you would all go out, if you do love what we do, you know, and you want to support us and our endeavors in, you know, in the Magic community, you should go to face2facegames.com and buy our tokens. They just got put up. We had Durfington redo a bunch of tokens for us. We had Polish Tamales do a bunch of tokens. And so there are like two full sets of A-Team tokens. And if you buy all four, you also get the fifth token, which is a group shot. So, and they're just insane. Like the Polish Tamale shot is hilarious. We did like Saturday morning cartoons themes. We did a hangover group photo, like a group picture, which is just hilarious. And then Durfington did like Ravnica guilds. And so we all got associated with the Ravnica guild. They're insane. They're just absolutely bonkers. So go ahead, check those out, buy the shit out of them. And if you do, you will make us really happy because we will know that you love us.
Yes, they're amazing.
It's a tough sell, because if I go to face-to-face, I can get unlimited tokens of Sal for free.
Right, but, like, I mean, you've looked at our tokens, right? Like, have you guys done this yet?
Yes, I've seen the tokens. The Durfingtons look good, but the Polish Tamales is, like, simply, that's an amazing token. Like, that's poster quality right there, you know?
Yeah.
That was solid work.
Yeah, we're very excited. I actually initially, my token's funny. I was initially supposed to be Captain Marvel. From DC Comics, it's like Shazam, you know, because as KYT says, I have good posture. And so I told the wife, and she was like, no, you really need to have it make you He-Man. And I'm like, all right. So that's where the He-Man token came from.
If you have not seen it, we'll post it in the show notes. Like, you really have to see it to believe it. It's good, as good as he says.
Yeah, my favorite one, I think, literally is like the Hangover. The group shot from Polish Tamales is hilarious. You've got Medina, who got hit until he stopped moving. You've got Jay, that's in like a Vegas cocktail waitress outfit, including bra for the boobs. You've got me sitting with the Tyson tattoo, basically curled up in a ball. And then you've got KYT lying flat out. Oh, we don't know if he's unconscious or really enjoying the moose licking his groin. Like, I'm serious, this thing's perfect. So, anyways, yeah, you check them out. They're like 25 cents a piece. You can get a group of five of them for a buck. Like, it's not a lot of money, but they're so absurd. So help us out.
Sounds like a noble cause to support.
All right, I know we're out of time. There's one more important question. Scotty, are you a hockey fan or not? You're in Canada. I assume you're a big hockey fan. True? Untrue?
I'm not a big hockey fan, but I
is that because you live in Maple Leafs territory? And
you know what? It's funny. Watching hockey was something that I didn't really tend to appreciate until I started going to the bar. When I was growing up, like watching hockey games was terrible. Like, I'm just so bored and I'm falling asleep because the white of the ice is just going back and forth so well. And I think the advent of high definition television, was really a good move for me in terms of enjoying hockey, because you can actually see what's happening.
Yeah.
But also, like I said, being in bars and being in that environment where everybody's, you know, all hanging on everything that's happening and, you know, drinking with buddies, like, that's really what the experience for watching a hockey game is really all about.
So who's your team then?
So I have, you gotta root for the Leafs. Like, I'm sorry.
Are you Googling hockey teams right now? Like, what's with the hesitation? Oh, I got lots of favorite teams.
No, you've got to root for the Leafs was a good answer.
You definitely don't have to root for the Leafs because they will never win the Stanley Cup ever.
That's fair. But so long as you accept that, it's okay. I like when I was growing up, I really enjoyed watching the Edmonton Oilers, like with Gretzky and Curry and Messi. Like those, like Grant Fuhr is insane, like stood on his head all the time. I'm sure it was the cocaine, but like it was a really, really entertaining to watch. The Calgary Flames that won the couple years later was also, it was a really good team. And for me, almost, it was almost like I have a special appreciation for some teams specifically over the course of time. So that Flames team was really good. That Oilers team was just legendary. I liked the Avalanche for a while too, when they were loaded and they had Peter Forsberg and all those guys on the team, and they were pretty sick. But as it stands right now, like, I don't have any team that I'm really just hung up on as being amazing. So I gotta just go for the old standby and root for the Leafs. So there, not just a bandwagon jumper.
All right. Well, I had to ask because I'm a huge hockey fan and I live in Oklahoma. So I take the chance to ask every guest we have who may have an interest in hockey about hockey. So the Leafs.
By that, he means you're the first one he's asked.
That's not true.
Nice.
Yeah, we're done.
Ryan, deal with it.
Not Ryan.
We are going to have to shamble together an ending somehow.
Hey, Corbin, deal with it.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I was on recording, so you should probably just be fuckheads to me. That's cool.
I don't think he can hear us. This
no, he
is like
can't
the
hear
best.
Us. He doesn't know that I've been recording for the last 3 minutes also. Oh.
best ending to a cast yet.
Right. We don't need Jason to end this cast. Technical difficulties aside, this is Brainstorm Brewery, and we'll be on next week.
You can't post my picture.
I gotta see this. It's the same picture.
Exactly! It's the same fucking picture every time.
Alright.
Alright.
Oh, yeah. And make sure that you're looking for episode 100. It's gonna be absolutely insane. It's actually coming out in the next.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.